You are listening to Kilometer Zero by the Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches.
Wednesday, May the 19th, 2021. Stage 11 of the Giro d'Italia, from Perugia to Montalcino, Strada Bianca Day. The stage is 163 kilometres, not far short of the one-day classic in early March that features the white dust roads of Tuscany and which has become one of the most eagerly awaited days on the calendar. The Giro's version of, or homage to, Strada Bianca includes 35.2 kilometres on dirt roads. And it's all packed into the second half of the stage, the first section coming with 70 kilometres remaining, the toughest on the Passo del Lume Spento, a climb that tops out at 40 kilometres to go. The last time the Giro went to Montalcino, in 2010, there was a similar stage over white dirt roads, or brown dirt roads, because on that occasion they were turned to sludge by torrential rain. It was one of the toughest and most dramatic stages in years, won by Cadel Evans. Now, with Strada Bianca's reputation and status growing every year, a stage of the Giro over the dirt roads inevitably invokes the early spring classic. And especially this year, with the 2021 edition of Strada Bianca, a race that we are likely to be talking about for years. It saw an extraordinary constellation of stars in the front group. The three Galacticos, Mathieu van der Poel, Wout van Aert, and the world champion Julian Alaphilippe, whose attack on Monte Santa Maria with 50 kilometres to go caused the split.
Jeunette's in third. Well, here goes the world champion, Julian Alaphilippe, with kilometre after kilometre still to go on Monte Santa Maria. Looks behind, surveys the damage. He's already done a bit.
As well as the three Galacticos, there was one of the sport's brightest young stars, Tom Pidcock, and the last two Tour de France champions, Tadej Pogacar and Egan Bernal. Briefly, there was also the young American Quinn Simmons, a former junior world champion, though a puncture saw him dropped, leaving only cycling royalty. Alaphilippe, van der Poel, van Aert, Pidcock, Bernal, Pogacar, and Gogel. Who? Michael Gogel, the 27-year-old Austrian from Team Quebeca Assos. Here's what we said about Gogel in the cycling podcast after the race.
An amazing front group in that race of some of the real stars of the sport, Tour de France winners, Classics winners, and Michael Gogel, to steal a line from Rob Hatch. What did you make of it, Daniel?
Well, Rich, it's funny, that theme you just mentioned of Gogel being the interloper. Among the many sort of poetic pieces that were written, I suppose, all over Europe over the weekend, and one that really caught my eye was by a friend of ours called Leo Piccione, who's part of the Bidon cycling writing collective in Italy. And just a couple of paragraphs of Leo's piece. Where may the intrinsic merits of the race end, and where may those of the brood of polyhedral thoroughbreds who have taken hold of professional cycling begin? The fact is that watching Strade Bianche was the cycling equivalent of pointing a telescope in the direction of galaxies so far away that just looking at them is a journey into an ancient past that holds mysteries and answers to the origins of everything. In the desolation of another edition stripped of the audience it deserved, Michael Gogel was our emissary, the only human being entitled to witness from a forearm's length away the decisive stages of a race that has already gone down in history. And in the results, which future generations will pore over with the same wonder with which we now examine those of a Paris-Roubaix a century ago, there is and will still be him, the Austrian interloper, in sixth place.
A couple of months after Strade Bianche, on the eve of the Giro, I caught up with our emissary, the Austrian interloper, the only human being in that front group, to ask him about his coming-of-age performance, which in fact followed a top 10 in 2020, a result that transformed his thinking about a race that he'd previously been keen to avoid. Are you bored of talking about it yet?
No, I mean, it's a nice day to remember, actually, for myself as well. So, yeah, I'm keen to talk about it, of course.
I want to kind of go back to last year, because it seems that the love affair with that race began then. I read some comments from Lars, your DS, about that. You were, when they suggested to you to do it, I think you were quite reluctant, were you initially?
Yes, but that goes back to the first time I did that race. I think it was in 2018, I think. And I have to say that I was preparing super, super hard for that edition. And it was the rainy edition in the spring. And I was in great shape, actually. And yeah, coming into the first sector, I lost my handlebar and I had a really, really bad crash. And so I was not a big fan in terms of the risk, especially because we were then last year just coming out of the lockdown and a period where you were training a lot. So I was thinking, okay, it is a nice race, definitely, and it would suit me. But at the same time, there is so much risk involved that in that special year, last year, I thought it's maybe better not to have it. But Lars, my DS, as he said, he convinced me, and I think it was a good call.
Gogol emerged a few years ago at the 2016 Vuelta, when Alberto Contador praised him for his work on his behalf. They were riding for Tinkoff, but Gogol followed Contador to Trek Segafredo and then joined NTT last year. He's a strong all-rounder who has perhaps, at least until now, not really carved out a niche for himself, but maybe that explains his performance at Strade Bianche. As the composition of the lead group demonstrated, it's a race that suits a wide array of talents. What kind of rider would he say he is?
Well, I would definitely not see myself as a Grand Tour rider. I was at Alberto's side mostly for risky finals, let's say, or transition days, not because I'm a really good climber. I think my ability is more in like the punchy stuff, like those punchy hills in Strade or, you know, other classic style races. Yeah, we saw it this year that guys like Pogacar and Bernal, who are normally really good climbers, they are also up there. And then you have the world-class riders like Van Aert and Van der Poel, of course, who were up there. So I think it suits a broader spectrum of riders. And yeah, that's definitely an interesting mix for that race.
So last year, it was an unusual edition as well, because obviously in August and it was very, very hot. Run me through how that race went. You ended up ninth on the day, but how did the race go and how different was it to 2018?
2018 was just basically, for me, was a race of survival after that crash. And I continued racing just because I was so prepared for it. And I finished out of time limit that edition and I got super sick and a wound inflammation afterwards. So it got me 2 weeks off the bike that race. The edition last year was like the total opposite from the weather conditions. What gave me a small advantage last year was that we had a training camp in Lucca before the race, and we were training in really hot conditions already. And I saw that many guys were struggling last year just because of the heat, and I think that was a factor that I could cope well with last year, which was basically actually really a survival race.
How did you find the roads? You know, was that a bit of an eye opener for you that you realized that you could actually, you know, ride pretty well on them?
Yeah, I think even last year in 2020, the parcours was trickier because the gravel was more loose. There was one situation where I really realized that I'm quite good on the gravel also when it's technical, because I had to swap bikes with my teammate Roman Kreuziger. I had a flat tire and he gave me his bike, and I had to chase back just when the race got opened up. And I had to do a gravel downhill, and I overtook so many riders. But to me, it didn't feel like really risky. I just could go that fast. I don't know if just don't see the risk, or I'm willing to take it. But I think I'm quite fast in those sections.
And did you enjoy it? I mean, do you enjoy gravel riding anyway? Do you enjoy those kind of challenges?
Well, definitely. I think my natural character is just like, I like those fighting adventurous days where you really have to have a hard head also to be in front. And for me, it's just epic, you know, just to be at the start of a race like that. So I really get motivation. Maybe that gives me an extra advantage just because I'm not scared or whatever you want to call it.
And finishing ninth there last year obviously planted a seed for you, because I read on Instagram you put a post after the recon ride this year. There was not a single day that I wasn't thinking about Strada Bianca in my winter preparation. So yeah, it was obviously that ninth place there, and I guess the experience of enjoying it and realizing you were good at it, did that really, as I say, plant a seed? Did it really make you think this is a race I should target next year?
Definitely. So when the season was finished last year, and the team was then fixed for this season, I sat together with my coach and my sport director, and we made a plan for the season. And the first thing I said is that Strada Bianca is going to be my first target. And as I said in the post, there was not a day where I didn't think about it. It just gave me so much motivation. Looking forward to the race during those winter miles was just a nice motivation. And
Is there anything you can do also in your winter training to prepare specifically for that race? You know, is there any, did you do any gravel riding? I mean, I know the roads aren't the same everywhere as they are in Tuscany, but you know, is there anything you can do to incorporate some of the skills that you need?
Maybe there would be, but I didn't do any anything such.
So it was just something that you were sort of dreaming about while training?
Yeah, exactly. I was a lot in Tenerife this winter, first in December with my girlfriend. Because she's a runner, yeah. And we were there with her training group in December, and then in January I was with Simon Clark already in altitude. And during those many hours on the bike, I was dreaming of the race, of course.
And when you were dreaming about it, what were you imagining? You know, what I mean, obviously you did put in a great performance and result, but what in your dreams was possible for you?
Well, that always depends on your competitors, but of course, I was dreaming of a top performance and a top result. I was maybe dreaming of the podium, and that is for sure a goal I have in mind for the next season.
You obviously have found a niche here, and there are certain other riders as well who've ridden really well in this race. You said it's a kind of, you know, a very broad spectrum of talents in that front group, but what are the characteristics that you need to do well on this race? You know, how does the Strada Bianca compare to, say, the pavé of Paris-Roubaix or the cobbles of Flanders?
I think the endurance of the riders, maybe, because in Flanders and Roubaix you still have heavier riders. And in Strada, it's just different. I think it's so much more altitude meters. But what you need to have for sure is just the technical skills. Yeah, the power on the punchy climbs, but also the endurance, because the longest sector is Monte Santa Maria, it's called, and it's 12 kilometers, and this is where the race normally opens up completely. And that sector is just hell, you know, like the whole sector. I was on the full limit, and you just have to get through. And this is where I got dropped in 2020. And I actually had it in mind also this season, also this edition, because I was also so on the limit this year, and I just thought, well, I need to get after this point where I dropped last year. And when I managed it, I was just crossing fingers to not have a puncture or any other problem. And then I knew that you're in the game, and I'm just happy that it worked out.
Optimize your fueling strategy with real-time glucose data, actionable insight, and personalized analytics. We are here to help you achieve your performance goals. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success. Kilometer Zero by The Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens.
Super Sapien sponsors Kilometre Zero, and as part of their sponsorship, we've been hearing from some of the riders on Team Novo Nordisk, all of whom are type 1 diabetics. David Lozano has been with the team since 2013 and is the joint longest serving rider, along with Andrea Peron, who we've heard from earlier in this series. Lozano's diagnosis as a type 1 diabetic was dramatic and came when he was in the Spanish national cyclocross squad and had just signed his first pro contract.
I was diagnosed on 3rd of December in 2011. It was the day before a World Cup of cyclocross, so I was selected with the national team to go and race there. And then I was feeling pretty tired that week, even like I had a lot of, I was peeing a lot, I was feeling really tired. I dropped a lot of weight. And that morning I went out for training with one of my best friends, and my right eye was blind. I couldn't see anything, and I was hitting the trees with the cyclocross bike. And then as soon as I got back home, I had a shower and we went to the hospital. And yeah, I got the news that I was a type 1 diabetic. I signed my pro contract 2 weeks before that. And 1 week after that, my contract was broken. So yeah, it was quite tough at that moment. But now I can say it's a good experience of life, no? At that moment was really dark, like... I was tired of cycling and everything, because like you find out like you're a number, no? Like you're in the team. If you give good results, you are not valuable if you are a good person, you know? And it was tough for my head at the start.
We'll hear more from David later on in our Kilometre Zero series from the Giro. In the meantime, to find out more about the Super Sapien's continuous glucose monitoring system, go to supersapiens.com.
Signs absolutely brilliant for the Ineos Grenadiers, as you said, but also for any bike racing fan who maybe has tuned in a little late today and is suddenly having a look at this. This is the group that I think most will have been dreaming about when they went to bed last night. 47 kilometres remaining. We're on the longest and hardest sector of this brilliant Strade Bianche course around Tuscany. It's a lovely sunny day, the dust is kicking up in the background, and this is what cycling dreams are made of. Wout van Aert, Mathieu van der Poel, Julien Alaphilippe, a couple of Tour de France winners, young Tom Pidcock. For the Americans, you have Simmons as well. This is a wonderful, wonderful spectacle, and it's open.
When Gogol looked around and saw the company he was in, what did he think?
Well, that is actually a funny question, because in that moment of the race, I really didn't think about anything such as with what riders am I here now. I was just focused on the race and focused on getting a result. And yeah, never lost the focus on the bike race. And that is actually what I thought until the finish line. And only afterwards, when I went to my telephone, I got so many messages about my performance. But during the race, I was just focused on the race.
Yeah, I mean, for all of us watching, you know, looking at that group and seeing the world champion, you know, Van Aert, Van der Poel, and then the last two Tour de France champions in that group, it was a sort of concentration of talent in one race that we've never really seen before. But that didn't even enter your thoughts at all.
No, not in that moment, but only afterwards. And I have to say that it gave me a little smile also when I rewatched the race myself, and I was like, okay, I really get why people are excited of seeing me there, because yeah, it was special, definitely.
And I guess, you know, you were sixth, and you said you'd love to be on the podium, but being in that company and surviving so long in the race in that company and then finishing among those riders, does that make that result more special? You know, because it's not, you're not just sort of among average riders there, you're among some superstars. So is that sixth place worth even more as a result of that?
Well, I guess in a way, yes. It's of course, the race was, I think, with one of the world-classiest fields you can imagine. So finishing up there in the front, I think, is definitely different than finishing in the front in a less qualified race, let's say.
But in the moment, I guess, when you know the race was still there in front of you to be won, you know, how did it unfold? I mean, when you were in that group, did you feel that you were on a really good day and that you had as good a chance as anybody else? You know, what happened then?
There was a moment when Alaphilippe was accelerating one more time, and Van Aert and I think Pidcock got dropped. In that moment, I was feeling really good, and then I was thinking, wow, what is possible for me here today? But then, yeah, on that steep gravel section where Van der Poel attacked, I was really amazed by how strong he was in that section.
Pogacar is losing the wheel at the back. Also, Tom Pidcock just starts to blow, and here goes Mathieu Van der Poel. Lift off of Van der Poel, and Alaphilippe is the man who's trying to follow. Mathieu Van der Poel with an explosion on Le Tourfe, and he is gaining meters by the pedal stroke.
I just thought, wow. I think one mistake I did, but yeah, this is something I know in the future, that I was on the wrong side in that gravel section, because I was more in the loose gravel when the attack from Mathieu happened. And I had to go past Van Aert, and afterwards I couldn't, I think maybe if I was on the right side in that moment, maybe I could hold on to Bernal somehow. But this is something I take out for the next year.
What, when you watched it back, were you able to watch it in a detached way at all? Because for a lot of people watching, it was a hugely enjoyable race to watch. You know, some of the performances were amazing. It was great to watch. Were you able to enjoy it, or were you just, again, reliving it through watching your own performance?
I think I was definitely watching it a little bit more with an analyzing eye, let's say, for myself. But yeah, of course, I was also enjoying it. To rewatch when you're on a good day is always, it's always nice, let's say.
And you must have, to have ridden like that, taken, it must have done a lot for your confidence for the rest of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I think it shows what I can do when I'm on a really good day. And the last races now in the spring have not been as I was hoping for different reasons. I had a small cold, for instance, during some of the Belgian races. But it is just giving me motivation to keep on working as I do now and search for a day like that again.
Gogol's performance at Strade Bianche fitted a pattern of strong performances from Quebec at Assos, a team back from near death and apparently rejuvenated in 2021. An episode of Kilometre Zero at last year's Giro, NTTSOS, was our lament for the African team. It really looked as though their days were numbered. But at the 11th hour, Douglas Ryder, the team principal, announced that the team had been saved and would be known as Quebec at Assos this year. How did the uncertainty affect Gogol?
So I think everybody from our team was in a bad situation, because when we got informed that the team is not going to happen, that the team is in trouble, we were not informed that it's not going to happen, but that we don't have a sponsor yet. I think that put everyone from us in a pretty bad situation, because all the other teams also know that you are on the market and you are actually in a take it or leave it situation, let's say. And I was really hoping till the last moment that the team is going to happen. I did have another option also in the World Tour, and it was really the last moment that this team continues, and I was in the end really happy to continue my journey with Quebec Assos.
Do you think that kind of good news that everybody got sort of unexpectedly at the end of the year has actually helped you in a way this year as a team? Because it's a team that maybe struggled to get results the last couple of years, but really this year has looked almost like a different team.
I think it is a matter of different facts. I think although we might not have the biggest budget of all World Tour teams, I think that's not a secret, but I definitely think that we work in a really, really professional way. I think everybody of the team is trying to get the best out of himself for the better of the team, no matter if it's the coaches, the sport directors, the managements, the swanners, the mechanics. I think everybody is just motivated, and we had a good training camp in January, and everybody is motivated, and I think that definitely makes a good ambience to perform well.
With this year's Giro visiting the white dirt roads, was Gogol not tempted to return to Italy to target stage 11, the Strade Bianche stage?
It was never really on the paper, let's say. I also didn't really know about it until you told me now. But I guess with the spring races that I did until now, it is quite hard to be also in really good shape than at the Giro. I think this is something to manage. You already have to plan on that in the winter, I think.
Well, it sucks. You could be able to watch it on TV and enjoy it, maybe, the spectacle.
Yeah. Or maybe even be jealous of not riding. Yeah.
So, I mean, now are you already thinking about next March and another go at Strade Bianche? You know, ninth last year, sixth this year. Surely the podium next year is within range.
Yeah, definitely. First and foremost, I want to still ride really well this season, of course. But yeah, Strade Bianche 2022 will give me more motivation again in the winter months, I think. And yeah, as you said, the podium is within reach, so that's a great goal to have.
Another of your Instagram posts after the race, baller day in the office, you wrote on Instagram, happy about my performance. I mean, those other riders that you were in the break with, have you, as I say, it was a special race and a special breakaway, and I think a race people will be talking about for many years. Do you share is there a sort of bond between you in races? Have there, in the races since then, have you managed to, do you share a kind of comment or anything with on any of those riders?
Yeah, definitely. I've been talking to many of them after the race, and also in Tirreno, for instance. And it was really, really cool from those guys, because yeah, they all were in a way happy for me that I could make this performance, which was actually great. And yeah, were some nice gestures from those riders towards me as well. That was cool.
You've been listening to an episode of Kilometre Zero by the Cycling Podcast, powered by Super Sapiens. The commentary clips featuring Rob Hatch and Dan Lloyd, and which did justice to a great day's racing at Strade Bianche, are from Eurosport. Thanks very much to them. The music is by 13 Senses, and this episode was produced by Will Jones.